You get the blue mic?
Every week I get the blue mic.
Usually, I think. I think I set up that way because you've been sick. I don't want your germs. I want to welcome you to Eagle Heights Podcast, broadcasting live from Eagle Heights in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Your friend in the digital age, the Eagle Heights Podcast. Sitting here with pastor, author of Sunday school blogs, and...
Lover of rain.
Brent Brittis. How are you doing today, Grindis?
Doing well. Thanks, Ryan Smithy.
You know, I walked outside a little bit ago, and it is very cold.
It's chilly.
Very cold.
It's like we're living in Chile.
It's...
In the Andes.
Is Chile chilly? Probably not.
It's got mountains. It's got to be chilly. The Andes Mountains. It's chilly up there somewhere.
So the Andes Mountains where the Andes mints?
No, wait. Which one's... south. Is it Chile or Peru? Which one's further south?
I don't know. I think Chile.
And you got a university education from the Oklahoma State University.
Hey, I have an education.
I went to a directional school. I've got an excuse.
I have a degree in marketing, not geography. I'm sure somewhere along the line,
if you're
going
to market,
you
got to know where you're marketing to.
That's true. I did take an international marketing class, which was basically all the other marketing classes I'd had, and a chapter over China.
There we go. And they were wise to do that.
That's true.
Yeah. So what's up today?
Well, many things are up today. It's been a while since we've done the podcast. Last week, or Monday, I was out of town. The week before that was the zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. The week before that was Easter. We've been bamfrazzled and foolhardy. along the way. So this is what you've been waiting for. It's the return of the Eagle Heights Podcast. So Brent, we have a question that someone put in. I want to talk to you about a new segment on the Eagle Heights Podcast called Brent and Ryan's Literary Corner.
All right.
In which we're going to talk about a book.
Let's do it.
Because we read them. Well, Brent, let's talk about our question first as you awkwardly smell that book. What does it smell like?
You know,
you like the smell of books?
I do like the smell of books, and I like having books in my hand. What's that noise? Is that thunder?
It's either thunder
or... Is it
or
the Oklahoma City thunder, or is it thunder from the sky?
It's the return of the zombie.
Is it Russell
apocalypse?
Westbrook landing after he takes off?
Did you see his dunk last night?
I think I did.
It was redunculous.
Which, what? Okay, we got to quit doing this, but quickly tell me about it.
He dunked it, and it was good.
I mean, like, was... It like he was.
It was like there was an invisible escalator,
springboard,
like on steroids, and he went whoop, and like cocked it and slammed it and came down and did his little He-Man roar. It was awesome.
Okay, good. Anyway, I thought I heard something, but let's carry on.
Yeah, it was thunder. Brent, I forget what I just asked.
It is
you.
I, your furry pal, Brent.
Yes. So we'll continue on. This past Sunday, you talked about we're hitting some sermons where this is one of the things when we talked about Romans and when we coaxed you into doing it, we knew there are a couple of nuggets in there that we're just looking forward to mining, not in a way that like, this will be fun, we get to talk about whatever, but it's something that doesn't get addressed a lot in church. It's relatively controversial. It's putting people in jail across the globe. But we hit the Romans 1 passage talking about abuse of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
whereas Paul first goes after the abuse of heterosexuality and then the abuse of homosexuality. So talk a little bit about what the feedback has been on this, what you were hoping, what you were afraid of, what your thought was this past Sunday, and then why you are passing the buck for this next Sunday.
This seems eerily familiar. Because we did this in October. So
October, baby.
We did a sermon on homosexuality and then on sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that there's much more to add. What was I thinking? I think I'm like a lot of people right now who care too much about what other people think and not enough about what God thinks. And I was fearful of man because... Especially after this Supreme Court thing, you know, mm-hmm. the SCOTUS discussion of
between the SCOTUS and the POTUS.
That's true.
It's confusing.
The SCOTUS reviewing DOMA and Prop 8 out of California. You know, I mean, you saw it. And anybody who's on Facebook, I mean, it was just all that was on the feed. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, it's just this and that. And people were emotional about it. So to come out now, especially after that kind of brought it escalated it, and then try to come in and talk about homosexuality. And the other thing is, here's something, because our church is a lot of young people, especially university students and younger adults. You know, one of the things we're hearing is that like 80% of that age thinks that, you know, they have not a favorable view of homosexuality, but I think they have a bent toward not wanting people that if you talk about it, you're mean. Mm. So, you know, in that context, I just wanted to handle it well and be thorough and fair across the board, as you said, in addressing heterosexuality and homosexuality as where they go astray from the moral commands of God.
Yeah, well, I thought it was effective. Obviously, you were passionate. I think because it is such an emotional issue, I think you address that part of it fairly from a Christian worldview and saying, you know, what if one of my sons or my mm-hmm. daughter came to me and addressing that and how we should look at it as Christians. So I thought you did a very effective job. This coming Sunday, Tyson Ochsner, one of our elders, is going to be preaching on sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. One of the fallouts or consequences of God handing us over to ourselves mm-hmm. From Romans 1, 21 through 28. So this question goes kind of hand in hand with the idea of handing us over
okay.
to ourselves. It says Romans 1 talks a lot about giving people over to their desires. Mm-hmm. Politically, is there a point when Christians should choose to step aside? Is there a point we just say, you know what, our arguments are pearls before swine, etc. Let's just step back and let the old red, white, and blue flush down the...
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that we step aside. I think we can be forced aside. And I think we're always standing for truth where we can in a way. You know, the problem with the political thing is that oftentimes it's, a lot of people argue that because of our political stances, no matter how well-intended they are, they actually get in the way of the gospel, mm-hmm. that people see this only as, you know. So one of the accusations or charges against evangelical Christians is that we have, for a long time, because we've controlled the majority morally in this country, we've rammed down the throats of people our moral agenda. And they see it only as a political thing, and the gospel is not. So we've tried to create moral people apart from the gospel, and we've tried to say, you need to act this way, but we haven't told them that they need to be saved, mm-hmm. and then they can act that way. And so I don't think, though, that we just step out of the way. As long as we have a voice in a representative democracy, God's given us that democracy, I think we should continue to, in a way that doesn't, again, keep the gospel from being heard. And I don't know how you do that. I think it's a tension area that we just have to live in the tension about how far is too far and how much is not enough. I don't think we step out of the way, but eventually we might be pushed out of the way. And maybe that's not a bad thing, but I wouldn't just abandon the ship.
Mm-hmm. And from a political standpoint as well, in a democracy such as we enjoy and live in,
so-called democracy.
So-called democracy. A lot of the lawmakers and political scope is bent towards protecting "quote unquote" freedoms. Mm-hmm. Some of Christianity is personally limiting freedom for the sake of the glory of God and the betterment mm-hmm. of ourselves and society. Mm-hmm. So, in some ways, it becomes possible for the government to legalize and legislate sin mm-hmm. to a degree. Not that that's their goal, but it's a political machine, mm-hmm. not a spiritual machine. Mm-hmm. And so I think when Paul is talking about God handing people over to themselves, he's not thinking of this from a political mm-hmm. Point of view. Just because we can legislate morality does not mean that we have accomplished morality, mm-hmm. just what you have said. So, yeah. politically, should we choose to step aside? I think perhaps it's more of an issue, and you can expand on this. Let me know what you think. Our front lines aren't on the lines of politics. Mm-hmm. Our front lines are with the gospel, which we never have to step aside from. So it may be good if we see politics as the front line of this. We may need to not so much step aside, but step back and evaluate what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, you got a bunch of people obeying the laws of the land apart from the gospel, then they're in big trouble, right?
Yeah.
So
that's kind of like the blog that I wrote. If the United States of America says so-called gay marriage is now legal, that doesn't make homosexual marriage any more legitimate in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
So I think politically you could fight it, but I think more so explaining our stance, explaining the scripture and knowing it more so than just I'm a Republican, so I hate gays type thing.
Yeah.
Not that Republicans hate gays.
Well, some do.
Some do.
Unfortunately.
Yes. As do some Democrats, some Libertarians, and some Socialists.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Laws are a reflection of the collective cultural values and societal values of people to some degree.
Some degree, yeah.
Yeah. So, what's the point of government? Well, the Bible tells us that government is to protect the people, and they institute laws to accomplish that end. And so, laws are for the good of people, and they restrain evil. Mm-hmm. And so, the problem is when you leave it up to cultural opinion to decide what protecting people is. As I said on Sunday, you get this polytheistic, everybody's got their own idea, and then you get chaos. And I think that's where we kind of are. You know, we have a country sort of divided, and that's why there's so much chaos about what's right and wrong. But I think there's a place for laws. I think there's a place for legislating, as we said, outward morality, you know, as it's seen. But as it's been said often, you can't legislate the morality of the heart. But I don't know that means you don't try to protect people from themselves. I mean, we don't say
murder should be against the law.
Yeah, exactly. Everything worth talking about is really some sort of moral statement. It's loaded with morality, you know? I mean, you can't hardly say anything that's worth saying without making a moral statement of some sort. So I just don't know that it's good wisdom and common sense, taking what we know, just to say, well, the heck with the laws, and, you know, we'll just pull. I mean, what are we going to do? Buy some land in Southeast Oklahoma and create a monastery or something?
Montana.
I think we are, yes, Montana. How about Wyoming? We're Alaska, the last frontier.
Mm.
We're protecting people to a degree from themselves by legislating laws, but the problem is if that's only what we do. The question is, where do you start? I mean, how do you address the problem as a Christian? Do we rally together and form our coalition and try to legislate those laws, or should we focus more on the gospel and then along the way try to do things that collectively protect unborn babies and children and those sorts of things? I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah. And, you know, you said that the political viewpoint, so to speak, is a reflection of the collective culture. I think you could say almost the political process is more so a reflection of the culture. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, when we lose sight of God and we embrace idolatry, chaos breaks out.
Yeah.
So if you have no objective standard, then you have a bunch of people's opinions on a quote-unquote level playing field, in which case no one really has a greater voice than the other.
Right. It really does become, at that point, what's right for you may not be right for me, even though that's a self-defeating statement.
Yeah. So in a culture that has abandoned God or abandoned the objective standard, that's where you have complete political gridlock, because it's all just people's different point of views without any kind of idea of what is right, what is wrong, not seeking anything but, you know, ultimately what it would come down to, therefore, is not so much even representation of the people who think that way, but what the individual thinks who's been selected to that office. So it's difficult. I think a lot of the gridlock that we see is just as much an indication of our cultural agnosticism or atheism, however you'd want to put it. We like the idea of every man for himself, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, atheism leads you to that too, right, by the way, because I was listening to Richard Dawkins debate John Lennox yesterday and last night. And, you know, Lennox brings up the point of purpose. Lennox is a mathematician at Oxford, professor, a philosopher, very smart man. And he says, well, Richard, in his British accent, Richard, I can't do a British accent. So anyway, I'll move on. But Richard, what's purpose for life? He says, well, every individual in an atheistic world, a naturalistic world, must determine for their own selves what is the purpose is for their lives. Now, that is a formula for madness.
Talk about anarchy. Yeah.
And really no morality at all. So then what they'd say is, well, it's about the collective morality that we all come together and we kind of, you know, we have this innate Darwinian, it gets crazy, but if you leave it at that, that is a frightening scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got people eating other people because that's my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hope we've done more than confuse people here. I think there's a place for politics and legislation of morality, but let us be careful that we don't bully people in such a way that they won't hear the gospel. And I'm afraid anytime we tell somebody they're right or wrong, they're going to be mad about it.
Yeah.
So I think we just got to be real careful to pick our spots. But I think we're reaping what we've sown for a long time when we did have the moral majority, and we don't anymore. The fact is, we are rapidly becoming we're already in many places a post-Christian culture, and we're mm-hmm. rapidly becoming that in other places. And we're not going to be able to tell people what is right and what is wrong from our Christian morality standpoint any longer. And so we're going to have to figure out how to be the minority. And I think maybe that'll be a good thing. Somebody suggested this, that we'll have to be more gospel-centered than political-centered.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. That will hopefully give more avenues for the gospel, because we have to point to the objective one. You know, mm-hmm. it's like the old story of the elephant and the four blind men. You know, well, I think, you know, he's like this. I think he's like this. Well, there's another character in that story, and that's the narrator.
Yeah.
He has the objective viewpoint. He says, this is an elephant.
Right.
So we have to point people to it. We have to point people to the gospel, because, yeah, trying to fix the outside and not the inside just isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So hopefully, and I think we're seeing some of that.
Yeah.
As, you know, Christians are being marginalized, there is a rise in the gospel and gospel-centeredness. So, almost to, you kind of get nervous about the tipping point. Is the gospel becoming a junk drawer term?
Yeah.
You know, you throw it on anything. Right. But yeah, Christianity across the world is thriving where there is persecution. And so I think we could say in the next several years in America, hopefully,
we'll be persecuted.
We will see Christianity thrive.
We long to, we really don't. Nobody really longs for that, but we do count it joy to suffer for the gospel. At least that's what Peter and the apostles did. Mm-hmm. So you want to do a quick new segment, 5 minutes, that's all.
Quick new segment.
Rhythms of Grace.
Rhythms of Grace by Mike Cosper, How the Church's Worship Tells the Story of the Gospel. Now, Brent, this is a book.
Thank you for pointing that
it
out.
It has pages and a cover.
And it smells.
Mm. You know, I just can't... I read books occasionally on my iPad, you know, just because sometimes it's easier. But
you're with me and Albert Moeller on this.
I will never get away from the hold, the feel, the pages,
smell, being able to write
all
in
that.
It.
That, yes,
tasting it, licking it.
Yeah, I like
licking the pages.
That's awkward.
Scratch and sniff pages.
You're frightening me. But yeah, there's some. I don't know. There's something. I like books.
You like to kill trees.
I may be a curmudgeon. I don't care what they make it out of. If you're not killing trees, you're killing the world in some other way, because you're using electricity to charge your e-reader.
You sound like an environmentalist now. All right, what's the point of this literary moment?
This is a book I'm considering using with the worship team. You're using it with us as a staff. Here's what the little blurb on the back says. Is it singing? A church service, all of life, helping Christians think more theologically about the nature of true worship. Rhythms of Grace shows how the gospel is all about worship, and worship is all about the gospel. Mike Cosper ultimately answers the question, what is worship?
Mm.
How about that?
Mm.
You think I could do e-books? Or
yes.
Not e-books, but audiobooks?
I think you'd do wonderfully.
That's my new goal in life. So Mike Cosper, I'm familiar with him. He's the head of Sojourn Music. They're doing some interesting things musically and lyrically. Why? I'm just interested. Why this book to go through with the staff and with the leadership of the church? We recently went through one on prayer and basically about being a pastor. Why this book? Rhythms of Grace by Mike Cosper.
You guys have no creativity in application, do you?
There is a limit to how far creativity can be beneficial.
You take the word pastor and you insert Christian.
No, it's true. There's only so far you can go with creativity before it becomes fantasy.
Okay, so who did that clicking noise? Oh, yes, it was me.
You're moderately insane.
The reason we're never going to survive unless we get a little crazy. Is that from the 90s or the 2000s?
Probably the 90s.
Okay. The reason I chose the book was because Matt Chandler was raving about it. Mm. Now, I'm not the biggest Matt Chandler fan in these parts. I like him. That sounded bad. I love him.
Yes, that's more so to say there are very big Matt Chandler fans.
That's what I meant, yeah. You
Jason,
you dress like him.
I do not dress like him.
I saw you the other day.
He dresses like me. What? What? Wait.
Wait, I saw you the other day hanging from your guttering trying to stretch yourself out so you could be 6'5". You had weights on your feet trying to get taller.
That is true.
And you made a scar on your head where...
That is true.
To have where he had brain surgery.
That's right, over
I'm
the line.
Now. I'm out of
over
control.
The line.
I'm out of control. But he just said this is one of the best books on worship. And, you know, he makes... I read the introduction or preface or whatever it's called, and he makes some interesting distinctions right from the jump that it's true that there is this worship, this technical or specific worship that happens when we gather. Mm-hmm. That there's you know, even the word in the New Testament, which is the Greek word proskuneo.
Proskuneo.
It's a Greek word. It means to worship. It means to literally be on your face, prostrate, not prostate, but prostrate before God, kneeling and worshiping and paying homage. Mm-hmm. But then we also say, and rightly so, that there's kind of this life, every moment of our lives responding to God, making decisions based on what's best for us according to God's moral law. And he says it's both, but he's focusing on this coming and singing and hearing and listening and responding and encouraging. You know, what happens? What should be the point of the worship gathering? So he's going to create a theological narrative, and then he's going to talk about practical application of that. So I thought that would be helpful to move our staff along, saying, really, what are we trying to accomplish on Sunday morning in way of presenting the gospel and letting it shape us for the rest of the week? Those are his words. Mm-hmm. So that's why.
How would this book be helpful to a church member at Eagle Heights or someone who's attended or just a podcast listener, but particularly someone who attends Eagle Heights? Why would you recommend them getting this and perhaps reading this along with us?
Because
you're getting a kickback from Crossway Publishers?
No, I'm getting nothing from them. Well, besides personal edification, I mean, I think the reason I chose this book is because we want to be a gospel-centered, gospel-saturated, gospel-driven church, and we don't want to just gather to worship on mm-hmm. Sunday mornings to remember, to remind, to be shaped just out of vain habit. So there's a reason we do what we – there's a reason you put so much time in every week in doing what you do and selecting songs and picking verses and scripture, and there's a reason to our order to a degree, some of it practical, some of it theological. So it would just help you to know that the service is more than this kind of formality that we do because we want to get together and count heads, you mm-hmm. know, and because Brent's got to get a paycheck and so does Ryan. I mean, it would inform you there is a reason we do these things mm-hmm. and it would be instructive. And if we're going to worship for all eternity, it means it's pretty important, this forming and fitting that's happening now for that. Mm-hmm. We need to be prepared for it.
I'm always interested to hear when people ask a question about something in our worship gathering or some aspect of it, or talk to them about it, the reasons why we do it. And they're like, wow, I didn't know that y'all thought about, you know, but, you know, the lighting, the theology of lighting. you know, we had to talk with our worship team about that, because we do our lighting a little bit differently. We turn our lights off on the stage. We do, you know, and but there are reasons for virtually every aspect, every single thing that we do on Sunday morning. We've put thought into it. We've ushered it through the gospel. You know, what is the most effective use of the gospel, you know, here? Obviously, are there going to be some things that we do out of tradition? Probably so. Some things we do out of necessity? Probably so. But even the way that we do those things, hopefully, we have thought about for the glory of God and the edification of His church.
What is vanity? Vanity, so taking the Lord's name in vain, it's doing it, it's using God's name thoughtlessly or in a demeaning, irreverent way. But especially thinking about thoughtlessness. If we don't have reasons for doing what we're doing, everything's in vain. It's not honoring to God. So, you know, it's always funny, isn't it, when somebody comes to us, and I don't mean to be mean with what I'm about to say, though.
Yes,
I suppose that's all, that's a preface for I'm about to be mean.
Yes, you do.
But when somebody comes to us and they're like, I've got this great idea about, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, we've thought about that like 400 times.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're kind of like, well, you walk them through it and you try to be kind, but then you're thinking, we've been through this 400 times in staff meeting anyway.
Yeah.
Now, occasionally we get something and
for sure.
Yeah. Haven't thought about that.
For sure.
That happened to me this week. But a lot of times, trust me, people, we live in it. We're immersed in it.
Yeah.
But we welcome your critique and input.
Yeah. We certainly do. Everything from, we want to assure you, everything from, like you said, what we preach through, to the songs that we sing, to where we put the announcements, our lighting, our volume level, all has theological reasons and implications. So very little is done just based on preference. So if you think our volume is too loud, if you think it's too soft, I would be happy to talk to you about why we have chosen that particular volume level from a theological standpoint.
We're open and honest.
Yes. Your friend.
It's raining outside again. I love it.
That's very honest of you. So, again, the book is Rhythms of Grace, How the Church's Worship Tells the Story of the Gospel by Mike Cosper. We are getting no kickback from this, but this is something that we are reading through and would invite you to read through as well. So, as always, thanks for tuning in to the Eagle Heights podcast. It's been good to be back with you, Brent Prentice. As always, if you want to, why do I always say as always?
Why
do I need to say that?
As always.
I mean, that is a self-defeating statement.
As always, you say it.
Check out the Eagle Heights podcast on eagleheights.com or on iTunes. You can also check us out on eagleheights.com, facebook.com/eagleheights, or on Twitter @eagleheights. Make sure and tweet at us through the week or Sunday mornings, as we enjoy sharing your tweets with our church family before and after services.
Come to Eagle Heights.
As always, thanks for tuning in. Dang it, I just said it again.
As always,
50 lashes.